Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Kirk. You're back for our third in a mini-series on No Trouble Found.
Yeah, it's a constant problem in the industry, and it's certainly a challenge.
Well, you know, we should have set up an experiment. We should have found a few things that we're not using too much anymore and sent it back, and then call them up and say, you know, did you have a No Trouble Found with that, or did you figure out what was wrong with it? That would have been mean. We shouldn't have, I'm glad we didn't do that. But
no, all these companies, especially high volume consumer electronic companies, really can't spend a lot of time going in and troubleshooting or doing much other than just a cursory turn on and see that it's functioning. So, you know, it kind of compounds a problem when you have a design margin that might be causing a low or intermittent failures that cause warranty returns. But it's a very tough problem to find.
Oh, it is. And so last time we talked about, you know, applying stress, and I would think that another thing that we didn't really stress too much in the last episode was, you know, looking at your systems. Is it a financial advantage for your retailers to send it back to you under warranty versus under just a restocking or other phenomena like that? Or do we understand how the customer is actually using the product? We touched on that a little bit. But, you know, after the fact, once we've get some percentage, and sometimes a very high percentage of no trouble found, like the one you illustrated where you replace five boards in order to get the system up and running, but only one of them was actually the culprit.
Right.
That's an 80% defect rate or a no trouble found.
That's correct.
So in that case, one of the ways to prevent no trouble found is to fix the maintenance process so that you know which board to replace. Maybe it's
right.
A diagnostic tool or a testing tool or more time.
And that's just kind of the limitations in, you know, many times we would prefer to have diagnostics that do a better job of isolating the actual troubled subsystem or component. But all of that, of course, the more detail you add to the diagnostics, that all costs money and time, and of course you've got to test it too. So
well, so does a 25% of what you returns. You don't you spend time troubleshooting,
oh, absolutely,
or counting, or sorting, or shipping, or whatever.
Sure, it's a very big cost problem, but you don't know that until you get to the field that suddenly you have a 25% problem.
Right.
You know, and so it's kind of always after the fact that the significance of a marginal condition or a marginal problem. And you also have the problem of a change happening after your design has been frozen, so-called, mm-hmm. and somebody changes a component supplier in the process and
that never
produces a low margin condition. So, you know, again, those – if there's a significant return rate of a product, it seems to be something we talked about. Your dad, you know, you talked about with your dad striking the old TV, and you know, mm-hmm. it got it to work again. That a little bit of stress sometimes changes the conditions and makes it, you know, returns it to the failure or non-failed condition. But certainly, we know that. Cracked solder joints or traces that are touching can be separated through thermal and vibration or shock can create a surface that's making contact but is cracked, can open it and cause it to be functionally cause a functional failure. And it's only when you're monitoring that in a stress condition can you see that. So that's
Again after the fact. So now let's turn it to, well, how do you prevent the, well, one, don't ship any products. That's kind of the Dilbert approach, I think, right, to preventing field returns, is don't ship out products. The other one is the dog bird approach, is don't answer the call phone. Don't let customers return anything, right? Neither of which are particularly beneficial for your business.
You're not going to have many customers after that.
That's right. So somewhere in between that, though, is that we get products back. We are going to get products back, and some proportion of them are going to be, for all the various reasons, they're going to be hard for us to figure out why it was returned, right, to some reproduce the problem.
Some of them are going to actually be good, and, you know, because of the reasons we mentioned before.
But the notion is the ability, we mentioned one idea is improved diagnostics so that you avoid the four good birds being returned for every bad one.
Right.
Which you mentioned costs money. But it's in the maintenance or troubleshooting part. Another one that's similar to that is the call center is getting better definition of what the problem is. And can you reproduce it over the phone, for example, so that you have a, and then gather, well, what's the situation? So we talked about a situation where they had a different setup or configuration. Well, if we learn through the call center ones that we're getting a high proportion of people using XYZ's widget with our product that causes problems, well, we might need to change the design to actually work with XYZ's new widget.
Right.
Now,
that can be a constant problem because the fact that new peripherals, for instance, for a PC come out all the time, and you have an older PC that peripheral wasn't tested with, and you can't expect the producer of that widget to test every user's configuration or the brand of PC or product that they're using.
Well, that's the world we live in, though. So in order to prevent issues with that is, you know, there's a variety of different, you know, communication standards and bus standards and all these other things.
Right.
It's making sure that your part of that equation is very robust and is able to tolerate variations, even if it's not within the strict letter of that standard, so that it can accept marginal components at times. It can accept a peripheral that puts a different kind of demand on the system than is expected right at the start. So it goes back to what we've talked about many times, Kirk, is just that idea of making a robust design.
Building in as much margin as you can that is cost allowed with the cost and time constraints of the design process. And that's why, you know, one of the things that I don't think has been looked at in this industry, and especially in electronics and digital systems, is how thermal stress and voltage and frequency together can be a very good detection, can provide a detection of timing software's marginal voltage situations that would cause only operational failures. The product would always be resettable and rebootable and come back to normal operation.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I include in my book, Next Generation Halt and Hass Robust Design in Electronics and Systems, a full white paper from Allied Telesyn. I think they're Allied Telesys now. But they talk about how they found many, many software problems. About 28% of the problems they found in HALT were actually software related or timing kind of probably related to the signal propagation that they were able to slow down and speed up because of thermal HALT.
Well, that's that interaction that especially firmware is particularly sensitive to propagation errors and timings, and as we push more and more circuits to high speeds and high loads, it heats, but also the margins on timing are very, very small, so it doesn't take a whole lot. But the idea of creating a robust product calls for us to, one, design is for as wide a set of specifications as we can for all the various elements and still get a functional product out the end, which is not trivial. That's a difficult problem. But also providing that feedback to the design team where while we're not able to test the couple hundred thousand different possible configurations for systems, especially since so much of what we make gets put into an open architecture, essentially, of whether it's a telecommunication server or your payroll system for your company or whatever it is, it's pretty much dependent on so many other parts. And right. Our ability to provide at least the environmental aspects, the voltage, current, EMI, dust and debris, the vibration, the temperature cycling, the temperature exposure, cold and hot, humidity. From a reliability point of view, we often can represent the robustness of the products in response to a very broad environmental set of conditions. It gets trickier, like you were getting into, is with software and timing issues and propagations. It's possible, but it takes a little bit more work. And the issue is it worth doing that during the design phase, where it might take you an extra week and create some extra work for your design team, versus dealing with it for the life of how long you ship the product and dealing with no trouble found and upset customers?
Right. That's hard to, you know, as far as making a business case or whatever and showing the cost savings of spending a little more time and pushing especially in, I'd say, clock, voltage, thermal margins to the fundamental limit of technology, or as best you can make it, may not be realized because, you know, HALT has really been looked at, and what you're looking for is almost, it's been traditionally looked for kind of catastrophic issues. Sometimes operational margin, but most of the time it's, you know, a real a weakness that you know, causes a hard failure. Or
the part falls off, or it catches on fire.
Part falls off, exactly. So I just, you know, what surprises me, Fred, in my research for the book, is how little information and how little focus there has been in the industry on the interactions between hardware and software issues and timing and variation. But as we know, we get into these higher speed digital systems, and there's no question that they'll go higher. The second or third order issues that used to be second or third order are now becoming first order. Just the dielectric properties of the FR4 in a humid environment versus a very dry environment changes a lot of the signal.
It changes the insulating fields, properties. Yeah,
insulating properties, leakage, all kinds of things. And so products are used worldwide. Almost all PCs are used in everywhere. And so you can't really test all the populations or test every combination of temperature, vibration. The basic strategy should be to build as much margin as you should expect. And if this is your first product, you've never done it before, then you build it to what you can. And then the next iteration, you'll be able to have kind of a benchmark of what is possible with a good design. As you build more products, you start realizing this should be able to operate within this range, because our predecessor product was able to do that too. But paying more attention to focusing on software problems from using environmental stress to skew what will be skewed in mass manufacturing, and that is the component pair, each component's parametric operation will, of course, be slightly different.
Well, you're saying use this stress on a handful of units to replicate or to stimulate the variation we're going to see in normal production and in use conditions,
yes,
too.
Right. And it may be even also some drift or degradation in the component over time as it changes. So yes, that stimulate the variation we're going to have in the mix of parts that we're going to have in a PC or in a consumer electronic, a high volume consumer electronics, where you know you're going to change. You may have to have second sources. You may have to, and that second, all of those sources are going to have some variation in their processes over time. So
yep.
These things are really hard to identify once the mass manufacturing has begun, and the best insurance against that becoming an issue or any of those variations in manufacturing at every tier becoming a operational reliability problem is by building as much margin as you can.
Yeah. So it's like I said, I think even in our first episode, Kirk, is it's always the designer's fault.
Once a designer has seen the ability to uncover something like this, though, that is the first place he'll go to.
Yeah, and it helps. And so we did a kind of a mini series here on no defects found or no trouble found or the various ways it's put together. And it's a problem. Almost every organization I've dealt with, when we're looking at, well, what kind of failures you're getting from the field, the number one failure listed is we don't know.
Right.
Which is sad. And so there are things you can do to actually address that. One is improve your design. I think that's the bottom line, is make the design as robust as possible for all of the unknown situations your individual products are actually going to experience. And good design includes understanding your customers and how they use it, their environment, all the stuff that we do or should be doing normally. The other thing to do is to take a look at how do you and or your customer recognize a problem. So the diagnostics, whether built in or the systems for troubleshooting an issue, are those robust? Are those accurate? Are they giving you good information? So,
right.
and then it's what's the motivations for returns? So it could be
right.
Finance and ordering processes. Now, you could save a lot of money for your warranty bill and become a hero in the reliability world by changing the return policy for your retailers. They can't send back perfectly good products just because, and
right.
for whatever reason. But improve the right. forecasting and return policy may, which is not in the body of knowledge, as far as I know, for
right.
any of the CRE or any of the reliability certifications, yet that can have a big impact. So take a look at the whole process. What is the elements that lead to getting a product back that you can't replicate the customer complaint on, and
right.
and break that down a little bit, add stress, improve the design, change, you know, understand the motivations for things getting returned, and you can chip away at this, what is commonly the number one category of returns. And
right.
The best field returns are the ones that don't happen, which is really great. And so back full circle to what we commonly talk about, Kirk, is let's give the design team feedback so they can make a more robust product.
Right. And then that's another, you just kind of illustrated too, that we also need to really focus on what the customer is experiencing as a failure. And
mm-hmm.
so better feedback loops from the field, and better understanding of what causes failures. Otherwise, we don't have a way of improving the product.
Yeah. Well, that's a good summary. Good. So let's wrap it up there. And
all right.
Thank everybody for our little mini series here. We got off into a topic that got sparked by a short conversation, and we'd like to hear from you. You know, what would you like us to dive into and explore or talk about based on our experience and background? If you're relatively new to reliability engineering, it's a great place to ask lots and lots of questions. So we'd be glad to to basically sit down with you and share with you what we know. If you're more experienced, what are the common questions you've run into? What are the things you've solved? And let us know what you do about it. You know, let us know what how you address something like No Trouble Found. If there's something you'd like to add to it or some other topic, how would you approach it? We'll bring that up on our future shows. So with that, Kirk, have a great rest of your day. And we're chipping away at, I think we're going to be within a stone's throw, maybe a week or two from the 100th episode when this one comes out. So I'm kind of looking forward to that milestone. Maybe have a 2 cups of coffee that day.
Well, I'm glad I got to participate in the series and continue on. And I've learned a lot from listening to the other podcasts in this series. So I encourage everybody to listen to them all.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right, thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.